Hello there. Just checking the levels here as we go live. This is North Shore Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore along with Tim Kearns. Our producer and engineer is Bill Proposky. And let me just check the levels here. That's a little loud. We'll bring it down because we're transferring from one computer to the other. There we go. And we will, doesn't that sound official, one computer to the other? And I'll cancel the music here, too, if I can find the right button. There we go. And Tim hung up on me. All right, so we'll get back to him in just a second. No worries. Anyway, Tim will be here. Hopefully it's going to be a nice little relaxing fun evening. We do have one serious topic to talk about in local sports, and that has to do, of course, with the MIAA, and its sanctioning of a local school. We'll get to that soon. Then also, I think just kind of as a summer exercise, we're going to talk with Steve Krause and Mike Grenier, sports journalists, about their selections, and Tim as well, their selections as the best sportscasters of all time. And no restrictions, no limits, whatever you want to put out there. I've got my list, Tim has his, and Steve and Mike presumably have theirs. Now, we're going to limit it to 10, although I've got 15. So we'll see where that goes. That's coming up tonight. Now, Bill has started a new series. Bill Newell has started a new series, on football coaches' profiles. And in these interviews, we are going to be interviewing the football coaches about themselves. Most of the time when we talk to coaches, if not all the time when we talk to coaches across the spectrum, it has to do with their teams, their kids, the competition, and so on. And we really appreciate all the information and the enthusiasm that we get from everybody we talk with. But we thought it would, Bill actually thought it would be a great idea to kind of focus on the coaches because we don't really do that. And so Bill has a couple of posts up already. One is with the St. Mary's High School football coach, Sean Driscoll, whom has been a great friend of MSO over the years. Terrific interview with Coach Driscoll. You've got to hear it. It's just super. And he also has posted already an interview with St. John's Prep football coach Brian St. Pierre, who discusses his career as a player and a coach. And, of course, both coaches have tremendous experience. And one of them, Coach St. Pierre, was in the NFL as a football quarterback. So great interviews. Hope you are able to listen in on those and tell us what you think. You can email us at rick@morestuffonline.com. That's rick@morestuffonline.com. And we got plenty more of those coming up. I've got a couple of interviews already lined up this week with a couple of coaches, as does Bill. So these will be popping out. No, not on that phone. Okay. All right, hold on. Tim?
Yes?
Call me on the home phone, please. No, you know what? Let me call you so I can figure out how to do this. Okay. Oh, my goodness. He didn't listen. All right. Let me see if I can beat him to the punch here. Oh, this is so much fun. There we go. Let's see. There we go.
Hey, you,
Yeah, your line dropped for some reason when you, it just dropped, so.
Yeah, I just put the phone down, all of a sudden it, you weren't there anymore.
Okay, I introduced, what we got on tap tonight, Coach, including our, our top 10 selections, for Steve, you, and me, and Mike, but we want to talk a little bit, about, the sanctioning. The MIAA has sanctioned, if that's the right word to use, I don't even know if it is, Bishop Fenwick High School, and is preventing them from participating in any postseason tournament action for every single one of their teams next year. And from what I've read, and you, I think, have gleaned something else, something different, I have read that when I saw the MIAA press release, that it involved a waiver, and it just said a waiver. It didn't say, but it said it was egregious. It used the word egregious. And a waiver for one student, I'm not sure how they get egregious out of that, because you've got so many participants, so many kids playing sports, girls, boys, everything across the spectrum. And to Tim, I got to tell. Let me put it this way, Tim. Used to have a principal who, if a teacher did something wrong, blamed all the teachers. I know teachers as a teacher. I know kids. Sometimes kids were blamed in a classroom for the action of one student. And I always thought, wait a minute, go after the perpetrator. And from what I've read, St. Mary's has apologized. They knew they made a mistake. They admitted the mistake. And, Tim, I talked with a couple of administrators, in fact, in the Catholic Conference over the weekend, And from their perspective, they had always heard that when something like this happened, you might forfeit games. One team might forfeit its games for that previous season that the kid participated in. But I also read that this student athlete didn't get to participate. So this is kind of weird. What are your thoughts on this?
The whole MIAA waiver system is, I think, a labyrinth for coaches and administrators to deal with. When I was coaching baseball at Gloss, I ran into an issue with a player from the next town over transferring in his junior year. But because he had played on the varsity team as a sophomore, was told he couldn't play varsity baseball for Gloucester because he had a sit, but he could play JV. And you talk about continuing to develop the skills and the abilities of the player. And this kid was good. And he was told that he could not compete at his skill level because he changed school.
Okay.
Okay. Now, he went in with his dad and to appeal before the MIAA, and they told him no, that he has to sit out, but he can play junior varsity, which he did for me, and he simply dominated every time he went out and he pitched.
Mm-hmm.
And he played the next year, and he had a very good year for the Gloucester varsity. But at the same time that they were in the MIA, another student went in there, and that student had a lawyer with him, and that student got a waiver. And so, I'm thinking, well, there's no equity here. You know, all you got to do is walk in with a lawyer, and as soon as the MIAA sees a briefcase, they cave and they give the kid a waiver.
Mm-hmm.
So, we did this kid no good. We deprived him of his junior year, in which a lot of college scouts look for kids because they expect more growth their senior, but they expect a continuation of growth. Junior year is where you can really sell yourself to not only the pro scouts in baseball, because most kids get drafted out of high school. Now, was that a possibility? A possibility, but you never know. But he didn't get a chance to compete and continue to develop at the he should have.
Yeah.
You better sit out here because you're going from one school to another.
Well, that happened to me. When I moved to Massachusetts, I moved after my junior year in Texas. And when I came to Massachusetts, they told me I could not play. I was not eligible to play any varsity sports for Gloucester High School because I had to be here for a year. So I did not get to participate in anything. And
a lawyer with you, because if you bring a lawyer, you get in. You know? They don't want to see people walking in with a lawyer because that means losses.
Well,
and it makes one big jumble.
Well, my opinion, and we'll see where this goes. I'm sure Steve might have a thought on it. Is that the MIAA has just really come down with a sledgehammer to put attack in, and I just think they have totally overreacted. However, saying that, I am not a litigator, I'm not a lawyer, and I'm only going by the news articles. But I think the idea of punishing everybody, every athlete at Bishop Fenwick, because of one season, one sport, where a mistake was admitted, I think is ridiculous.
Yeah, and we've seen in the past where teams have been penalized with lost games, and however many games that individual played in, they would be forfeited, and it drives you crazy. There seems no consistency in what the MIAA does in their decision making policies. A lot of times it seems like, who are you? You know, and how do we feel? What's our mood today?
Yeah. All right, let's take a break. We'll change the subject. Well, we might check in with Steve, see what his thoughts are on this. We'll come back. You're listening to North Shore Sports Night on MSO Web Radio. No, no, it's not MSO Web Radio anymore. It's MSO New Sports. Oh, my God, having the flashbacks. Okay. We will be back momentarily here, so please stay with us.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, we are back on this hot summer night, joined now by journalist Steve Krause, sports journalist, and also a news journalist, of course. And Steve, welcome. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm okay. I think Tim and I have been waxing poetic here, and Tim, you're okay, I presume.
Poetic? Me? I've never been known as being poetic.
Oh, no, you're a word master, my man. Steve,
he used to stumble over the poems.
I stumbled. Oh, well, never mind.
Sure, I got me every time.
Steve, before we go through our sportscaster top 10 here, Tim and I have been talking about the Bishop Fenwick situation. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I do. I'm not one of these people who believes in making the whole class stay after school because Timmy Kearns was talking. No, I've never been a big believer in that. I mean, if you have a kid that, I understand that the offense in question was a 50-year waiver or something like that.
Yep.
Well, okay, if the kid who got the 50-year waiver and there was some skullduggery involved, if he's on a hockey team, and I'm just using that as an example, not as because I think it was the hockey team or Jimmy Quinlan would kill me. But I don't understand why the football team can't go to the Super Bowl. If the football team, if the infraction had nothing to do with the football team, then I think it is really unfair to make the football team suffer for it. As a matter of fact, I think it's unfair to have the rest of the kids on the hockey team suffer for it. I think the perfect penalty for something like that should be to suspend the kid and fire the coach. Period. End of, well, it's not the end of the infraction, but that's a clear signal to coaches and administrators that the people who cause the problems ought to be the people who pay for them, mm-hmm. and not students who have nothing to do with anything, but just going to school. Those are my thoughts.
Yeah, no, I agree, Steve. You know, and the capriciousness of, I like that word, Rick, of the MIAA's decision-making process, you know, and I got victimized by it when a student transferred in. He had played the varsity as a sophomore, but was told he couldn't play on the varsity at Glossy because he had to sit out a year. And I said to Rick, it did nothing to advance this kid's development as a baseball player by making him wait a year. This isn't a college. You know, this is high school where it's a critical time in a kid's development as a student, as an athlete. And now you're telling the kid, no, you get to play with kids that are younger than you, which the MIAA would normally frown upon. You know, he so far outclassed the kids that he played against, it was ridiculous. You mm-hmm. know? You're retarding the progress of all the kids who tried to hit him because they couldn't hit the fastball that he threw because he was just too good of a pitcher for that level.
Yeah. You know, unless there's some clear and convincing evidence that, you know, you pressured this kid or, you know, went after this kid and everything and got him to go to Gloucester High or wherever, I mean, I think that you just have to, you know, some people just don't like schools and don't and want to leave them. And I can think of many, many, many examples, you know, where a kid went to a school like the prep, stars in his eyes, and they end up having about 40 kids just trying out for the basketball team. And, of course, 40 kids aren't going to play regular minutes on a basketball team. You know, some of them are going to get picked. Some of them are going to get put in other places. And if that's me, and I'm looking at 4 years of being third in line behind two kids that I know I can't touch ability-wise, you know, I might want to go back and play for Lynn Classical. And I would really think that there should be nobody that would stand in my way of doing that. Yet, you got to go through this whole process, and I don't care if you're a slam dunk to win the waiver or win the appeal or whatever. It takes its emotional toll on you to have to go to all these hearings and, you know, have your life picked apart by these bureaucrats down there who really know nothing about life as far as I'm concerned. I can't see that they do. And well, they're so out of touch with life that they've just forgotten. And I think it's a very bad system. And I think that, and I don't want to mention any names for fear of being put in a position of being attacked for libel or slander or anything like that. But you take two of the more prominent schools in Massachusetts sports history in the last 20 years, and I don't care which two you pick, because there are a few of them. And you have to wonder whether that kind of stuff goes on there. And if it goes on there, and I can't think that it doesn't, how do they get away with it at a school like Fenwick, who is never going to be compared with one of those powerhouses? They're the ones that get pinched.
Yeah.
You know, it's
right.
Go ahead.
One of the reasons is Fenwick's a small school, and the schools that, you know, you're referring to are big schools with big booster clubs that are going to come after the MIAA with big-time lawyers, and they're going to make their life hell, you know, and they don't want to see that.
Well, they're going to get that in Fenwick, because Fenwick can be a small school, but they got plenty of resources, and, there's plenty of cachet with a lot of those alumni over there. But to me, this is like penalizing Harvard, you know, for buying a kid a hamburger, you know, while Alabama and Nebraska didn't escape. You know, that's a little bit about what it's like to me. And, you know, St. Mary's just had the same thing happen to them, not to that extent, but, you know, they've been pinched for things that, you know, some of these other schools that are five times bigger than them, nah, they don't get pinched. And, you know, I just think that to me, it's a case of the MIA. It's like, why does a 3,000-pound hippo sleep on the living room floor? Because he can.
Yep.
No? And, anyway, that's why.
All right. Let's turn to other things. Always insightful stuff, Steve. I appreciate your commentary and your comments, because I think they're very poignant and very spot on, and I agree with you 100%. One of the things we're doing this summer, sort of as just an exercise in fun, is putting together these lists of top 10, top 5, whatever. And for this particular night, we're going to focus on the top 10 best sportscasters with no limitations. Whatever you and Tim and Mike come up with, it is. And so we haven't gone over anybody's yet. I haven't heard Tim's. So we're going to start with you, Steve, if you would. And if you would, please, if you have an order, you know, say from 1 to 10, go in reverse order from 10 to 1.
Oh, boy. Let's see. My number one is so ironclad that, you know, God couldn't take his place, but we'll get to that.
Okay.
Let's see. Number 10, I always enjoyed... I gotta get my list straight in my head now. I've always been a Dick Stockton fan for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
I liked him. I always thought he was very concise and, no nonsense. And he called Carlton Fisk's home run in the 1975 World Series.
Whoa. Yeah.
And he certainly was able to maintain the drama in that. So I'm going to go with Dick Stockton, number 10.
Nice.
Number 9 is going to be, I guess you have to count Frank Gifford as a play-by-play announcer because the other two were clowns in that. So I'm going to go with Giff because Giff had to maintain the sanity and the, in that booth or in Monday Night Football. And he did a pretty good job, you know? For an ex-jock, he learned the business and he did okay.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up and Tim jump in too because he sort of gave Monday Night Football some credibility because that was a brand new product at that time.
Right, and they had those two rodeo clowns in there with them. he's the one that had to carry the broadcast a lot of the time.
Tim, who were the rodeo clowns? Do you remember?
Oh, Sal and Meredith.
Dandy Don.
Forget them. Number 8, Pat Summerall.
Ooh, yeah.
Pat Summerall, he was so understated. I mean, I understand he had a lot of personal problems and everything like that, but he was so understated in his broadcasting that you never knew. There was never a time when he would say something and you couldn't understand it. Mm-hmm. And then calling Vinatieri's field goal in the first Super Bowl the Patriots won, and there it is right down the pipe. I mean, you know, I love understated much more than I like bombast. Mm-hmm. So, Pat Summerall, number 8.
Excellent.
Number 7 would be, this is going to come out of left field someplace, but Dickie Thorne, hockey. He was a great hockey broadcaster, as was Keith Emmerich. They were both, I would tie them with number 7.
Mm-hmm.
They were old-time hockey guys that knew the lingo, knew the ins and outs of the game, and they could get the subtlety, you know, and what players were doing on the ice and stuff like that. I like them. Okay, now we're down to number, are we down to 6 or 5?
6, number 6.
Okay, 6 would be Len Berman, not Len Berman, what the hell am I talking about, Len Berman? Marv Albert.
Mm-hmm.
You can't have a top 10 in anything broadcasting without Marv Albert. And I love him, and I love the fact that when my son and I used to play computer basketball back in the dawning ages of video games, the voice on the basketball game, which my son always beat me at, by the way, was Marv Albert.
You could never shoot anyway.
Huh?
You could never shoot a basketball.
No. This is true. I couldn't. I have instant amnesia when it comes to that. So yeah, that would be number 6 would be Marv Albert. Number 5 would be, and I know this is going to kill people, number 5 would be Brent Musburger. I used to make fun of Brent Musburger all the time. You know, whenever I saw Brent Musburger, I would run the other way. But, you know, I go back and listen to some old clips of him, and I'm saying, you know, he really wasn't that bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know? He certainly couldn't have been. He was, you know, in his day, he broadcast every major sporting event there was.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd have to say he'd be number 5. Number 4 is Al Michaels.
Ooh.
I like him. I like him on Sunday Night Football. I mean, how can you not, you know, do you believe in miracles? Yes. You know?
Mm-hmm.
That's just amazing to me that you could come out with that on the spur of the moment. Plus, he's just good. He's very interesting and entertaining. Number 3, Kurt Gowdy. I couldn't let the old master go without a shout out.
Mm-hmm.
After all these years, Kurt Gowdy was to me, you know, he was top shelf. You know?
Yeah.
Top shelf, the best, period. You know, no ifs, ands, or buts about it. He was the baseball broadcaster of my youth with the Boston Red Sox before he went national. And no matter what he did well. I mean, I was just watching the other day a rebroadcast of the Immaculate Reception. And who's doing the broadcast? Chris Dowdy.
Cool.
Number two, Vin Scully.
Mm-hmm.
I love baseball, and I love all those old NBC baseball games, and I love Vin Scully, and I love his way of approaching things. I love the fact that when Sandy Koufax pitched his perfect game, he noted the time to the second, you know, and what everybody was doing, and he was just so smooth and so good and so informative and so, and he was just not nasty, you know. He was good. And then number one with a bullet, nobody will ever take his place in me, is Keith Jackson.
Aha! Okay. Alright. Mercy.
What's that?
I was going to say mercy. But that was Ned Martin, but Keith Jackson, well, what did he say? He had a favorite saying like that. Oh, Nelly. Whoa, Nelly.
Oh, Nelly, we got a bumper going on here today.
Oh, I love Saturday afternoon football games.
Yep.
Must-see TV because of him. And I just have this image in my mind of, you know, like late November when he's mad.
Yep.
Might be a little snow flurry outside. Freezing cold, and I'm watching TV, and there's Keith Jackson. Whoa, Nelly, humble, you know. And I miss him so much when he retired.
Yeah,
he was just, I loved him.
What a list! Keith, I won't. I have. I agree with. It's funny. You've got seven names that I don't have. Tim, what's your comment on this stuff?
I have one of his lists. Mine is one of the local guys.
I thought this was all over.
No, it's whatever you think is the best. There's no limits, no constraints.
I'm kind of the local hick, you know. But I love Summerall with Tom
Brookshire.
Brookshire.
Yeah.
And,
I mean, they were so good together. And they played off one another, and it was no foolishness involved with them. It was just solid professionalism all the way through their broadcast. And if you didn't become a fan of the game after watching them broadcast, it had to be something seriously wrong with you, you know. Stephen, as far as Dick Stockton, I thought the same thing. His name came to me this afternoon, and I'm thinking, He was exactly as you described him, and that's how I thought of him this afternoon. That, you know, there was no BS with him. He was always dead on describing what was happening. He didn't go over the top emotionally with his broadcast, and I think he understood the nature of broadcast, doing a national broadcast, of bringing, you know, the LA Lakers to the East Coast or to the Midwest, and you had to present them in such a way as to make them acceptable to all the fans everywhere. And that's what his presentation style, I think, did for sports, no matter what he covered.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, he I was watching the Giants game with who the hell did they play this afternoon? San Francisco Giants were playing the Detroit Tigers. And the collar guy for the Giants says, well, here we are rooting for the Giants. And John Miller said, I'm not rooting for the Giants. I let the fans root.
John Miller, yeah.
But you know?
The thing is, I tell you what, God, what a list. And Frank Gifford does bring back some memories early on of watching Monday. Oh, my Lord. The thing about Al Michaels, Steve and Tim, to me, when he was covering baseball, and the earthquake shook, and he immediately became a news announcer.
Yes, I appreciated that. Yeah, he picked right up too. He didn't miss a beat.
No, and as you say, you know, his voice was made, his mark was made at the Olympics, of course. But to me, what made it was that showed the versatility and training of a sportscaster. You're so used to doing stuff without a script as opposed to talking heads, you know, in a newsroom.
Another name we didn't mention where that came into play was during the Olympic.
Right. I'm going to get to that. Yep.
Oh, Tim McKay.
I'm going to get to that. Yep. You better believe it. Those two guys were absolutely spectacular. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
oh my goodness.
He wasn't as much as an announcer as he was almost like a studio host.
Yeah.
But let's not forget ABC's Wide World of Sports when we talk about Jim McKay. And I will wax poetic myself on that later.
Kurt Goddard, the American sportsman.
Yep, there you go.
Who didn't watch when he had Ted Williams doing fly fishing?
Well, Steve, I don't know what the assignment's going to be for next week, but we got to come up with something.
You let me know what it is, and I'll be there.
Okay, and feel free to suggest anything, man, you know, because this is, I love these lists because it brings back such great memories. But also on your list, such fantastic voices.
Yeah, I just know that myself, I could never say enough about Keith Jackson.
He was, I love him.
Sophomore from Alabama. Just, the way he enunciated it, he made you smile. It was I'm old fashioned, and he's old fashioned, so it's a good mix.
Fantastic, fantastic. All right, Steve, we'll check in with you next week. Thank you very much.
Hey, thanks, Rich. Thanks, Tim.
Be well, sir. Right. Take care. All right, that's Steve Krause, who was sports editor and news editor at the Daily Item, and a longtime friend. Let's see here, Tim. I'm going to get a hold of Mike, and we'll get this thing started for the next segment here. But we're going to do your list. Let's get Mike in, and we'll do your list, and then we'll do Mike's, and then we'll bat things around. So let me get this music on here. We'll take a break and come right back. This is North Shore Sports Night on a Monday on MSO News Sports.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, we're back now with another great sports journalist, Mike Grenier. He's got his list, his hot list in his hot hands, but we're going to postpone that for a second because I want Tim and Mike to maybe talk about the topics of the day or whatever might be on your mind. And Mike, let's start with you, cleaning out the attic, as it were. What's the first thing that comes to mind in your sports coverage?
I mean, I guess, you know, it's the off season for the Celtics, so we can't quite talk about Jaylen Brown yet. Oh, that would be fodder for a lot of stuff should they sign him to a $295 million contract. Mm-hmm. But Tim, you love baseball so much. Should the Red Sox be buyers or sellers at the trading deadline? Because they're only two games out from the third wild card spot.
You know, where has sports gone that now we talk about being two games out? Not in first place.
Yes.
But of the third playoff spot.
That's right. Which was created just like two or three years ago, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and then there's another thing that the NBA just announced. We're going to have the NBA Cup. We're going to play it mid-season. Everybody's going to get a chance to play.
Yeah.
It's like, what? You know, it's like they try to mimic the Premier League or English football, where they have the FA Cup, they have the Capital Cup, they have four different tournaments within England itself.
Yeah,
you know, but before you get even to the Premier League itself, they have no playoff. You win no matter, you know, if you're in first place at the end of the season, you win.
Yeah.
You win the league. and yet now all of a sudden we're going to have the NBA Cup winner. Do they play the NBA playoff champions now in the end? You know, what if it's the same team? Do they, like, split the team in half and play each other?
I know, it's so confusing. I follow basketball, and I can't follow what the NBA is doing with this in-season tournament. But it certainly feels like Little League, you know, where everyone gets a trophy or a pat on the back.
It feels like a knee-jerk to what baseball, you know, to respond to baseball's making the game better.
Yes.
All right, Mike, I want to, if you don't mind, we're going to let Tim go through his list and then you yours.
Absolutely.
In terms of the top 10. And there's no limits, there's no restrictions, whatever you, whoever your favorite top 10 sportscasters are is what we're doing. And I don't, did you hear Steve's list?
I heard Steve's list. I heard partially. But the thing is, I felt I was on the spot all of a sudden because he was doing them in order. And I didn't know if that was a rule, a hard, fast rule.
Don't worry about it, Mike. Mine aren't in order.
Okay.
Okay. So
spring it on. Spring it on us. Go ahead, Jim. Go ahead.
Okay.
So, in no particular order.
Yes.
Okay. Bill Santos. You know, he was the voice. Most people don't even remember him being the voice of the Celtics back in the early mid '80s. You know. But he was, and then he came back. But the voice of the Patriots, no one does it better.
Mm-hmm.
No one
completely
does it better. No one will ever do it better than Gil Santo, and especially with his partner, you know, Gino Cappelletti. They were the seasoning on the steak that just went perfectly. You know, they never talked over each other. They were always in sync. And Gil just was there. I mean, you knew you had the Patriots when you heard Gil's dulcet tones. No other way to describe them.
Yep.
You know, and when he stopped broadcasting, your heart sank. So Gil's in my top 10. And then, of course, the illustrious Johnny Most, who, again, I had the good fortune to meet, back in the mid '80s, he was the Homer's Homer.
Yep.
Yeah. He was the guy you wanted broadcasting your team's games because he made you feel like you should win every game. You should be winning every game. You're getting screwed by the referees. No fouls are being called on the other guys. They were all dirty players, and it was so much fun to listen to Johnny Most. And especially, you know, like what these people say. I was watching the game and listening to Johnny Most, and it was like two different games. But that's what made it interesting. If you weren't listening to the game, you knew it was probably something like that, but not necessarily it. His over-the-top exaggerations, you know, of certain plays.
McFilthy and McNasty and all that stuff.
And saw them on, and it just went on and on and on. And McDirty and McNasty from Detroit. You know, and oh my God, how he hated those guys. You know, they were the dirtiest team. And he just called it that way.
Yep.
You know, it was, you know, Kevin the Fourth in the Fourth, you know, when McHale was a rookie and he was coming in as the sixth man and just destroying teams late in games. He just had a way of making you own that Celtics team. You know, you couldn't help it, and no one around Boston ever criticized Johnny Most. He couldn't do that, you know. All right, I liked my last guy. Some people didn't like, but I liked Ken Coleman.
Okay,
I remember the replay of Yastrzemski going back, and he makes a tremendous catch.
Yep,
that catch in left field, in which he dove for the ball, all stretched out, made the catch. You know, and he was. But when you're growing up as a young kid, the broadcasters not only are the voices of the team, but they're the voices of your youth.
No question.
And you tie into them. And I don't know how many young kids today can tell you all the different broadcasters that do the games. Because I'm not sure they pay that amount of attention. But when we were young, we knew who these guys were.
Oh,
you know,
no
they
doubt.
Were our babysitters on a Saturday afternoon, sitting on your back stoop with a transistor radio, listening to the ball games.
Yeah.
You know, and for 2 hours, you were just mesmerized by them, and you were just focused on what they were telling you, what information they were sharing with you. And, you know, for us to still remember what these guys said 50, almost 60 years later, you know, is a testament to the impact that they had on us as young kids.
That's right.
you know. Coming over to the Bruins, Fred Cusick.
Oh, yeah, great choice.
Fred, you know, Fred was understated, didn't get overly excited, but he could, he brought the game to you. I know Don Earl did a good job, but I just thought that Fred was that much better.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't think they've effectively replaced him since he's been gone. And then, of course, I have who see that Kurt Gowdy. You know, again, when you first turned to Radio 1 as a kid listening to the Red Sox, he was the voice. And he was the Al Michaels of the sporting announcers back in the 60s. He was everywhere.
No question. Yeah.
He did all the sports. He had the American Sportsman Show.
And Tim, he had a broadcasting school for a while.
That's
yes,
right.
Yes, that's right.
Yep. Okay, so that's five of them. And then Sean McDonough.
Okay, that's a good choice.
And Sean has made a career of doing everything, college and professional sports, after he left Channel 38 under... I never figured out, did he leave or did he kind of get pushed out the door?
He got pushed out the door.
You know, but he became the voice. He was the voice. And you know, when he first got the job, I said, oh yeah, he got the job, you know, because
Will McDonough, yeah.
Because of his dad.
Yeah.
But he quickly, I think, convinced everybody that, no, I'm really good at this. You know, come out of Syracuse, which is famous for, you know, producing announcers for all kinds of sports. And again, if you want to be a sports announcer, you go to Syracuse. And I always enjoyed turning on a sports program or a game and hearing Sean. Because I know I'm going to get a knowledgeable, quality broadcast.
Ultra professional, Tim.
Yes. Yes, for sure. Next two guys I lumped together because they were both professional broadcasters, but Ned Martin and Jim Woods, and I mentioned these guys last week. I prayed for rainouts when
yeah.
I listened to the games because nobody entertained me more with the history of the game, of the players, of the things that they did on the field and lightheartedly off the field than those two guys with the combined knowledge of the history of the game of baseball. I sat there, rap. I wouldn't miss a second. I wouldn't turn the radio off. I'd take it to the bathroom with me. I didn't care. Those guys were going everywhere I went. They were just so good. Yeah. And again, Jim Woods left rather quickly because he didn't like the stick that they wanted him to do. But boy, it was did he make listening to a game a joy? And this guy is without his partner, but I guess I could throw him in there with it. Don Orsillo and Jerry Remy.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Did two guys ever make listening to a sports program more fun than those two guys? Now, Dan Don and Howard were just silly and stupid. You know, Orsillo and Remy were silly.
Yeah.
But they taught you about the game. And when Don first started, I thought he sounded a lot like Sean McDonough.
He did, yeah.
And, you know, eventually he just sort of grew into his voice. And he is still beloved here in Boston. Fans love it when the Padres come back here and he's up in the booth. He gets a standing ovation every time. You know, so that's a sign of the respect that he gathered over the time that he was here. You know, but they made listening to the broadcast, no matter whether they were winning by 10 or losing by 10, they made it fun. And what other set of broadcasters have a piece of film that will go into broadcast history as Jerry's description of the thrown pizza slice? When the fan down the left field line whipped his slice of pizza at another fan who had dropped the foul ball.
Yeah.
You know, and Jerry got into the whole mechanics of the throw, you know. And put Don couldn't stop laughing at it, but Jerry just kept going with it. You know, yep. I'm hearing this from another angle, and it's, oh my Jesus! So it's like that's radio history,
yep.
And you know, God rest Jerry's soul, and you know, we wish he was still with us. We wish Don was still with us. But as I say, life goes on. And my last guy was the voice of the Bruins on radio. And he had the deepest, richest voice.
Yeah.
He thought it was the voice of God doing the Bruins game.
Yep.
And, of course, that is the illustrious and one-of-a-kind Bob Wilson.
Yep, absolutely.
Oh, my God.
All right, Coach, these are great. Obviously, a wicked local heavy bent. I don't see any strictly a national announcers on there, but that's okay because that's what we wanted.
Yep.
And these are all great, and it speaks, not very many. Kurt Gowdy is a repeat from Steve's, and I don't think I see anybody else. That's fantastic.
I went national. Oscillo, national guy.
Oh, no, I know, but they were local first, and that's fine. It's great. Yep. All right, Mike, what do you got?
Okay, I'm going to start with a guy, I don't know if anybody's mentioned him yet. When I was a kid, and before the Patriots were founded, Marty Glickman was the voice of the New York Giants.
Yep.
And he had such a great voice, perfect radio voice, but he also adapted to TV. And he was, like, very popular in the New York area. And matter of fact, Rick and Tim, he competed in the 1936 Olympic Games for the USA, and was about to run the 400 meters. This is a sidetrack, but I'll make it quick.
Mm-hmm.
He was about to run the 400 meters, and of course Adolf Hitler was watching this. And he suddenly was taken off the track because it was felt that Adolf Hitler would be offended because Marty Glickman was Jewish.
Right, right.
And so they replaced him with some guy named Jesse Owens.
Uh-huh. Yep.
And they won the gold medal in that event.
Anyway, yep.
But anyway, Marty Glickman went on to have a great career as a broadcaster, and before we got to know the Boston Patriots, that was who I had to follow, the New York Giants.
Yeah.
It was the team on TV, and Marty Glickman did the radio, and he did some television, and he just had a great voice, and he had a very long career in the New York City area. All right?
Yep.
Now, my next one, did someone mention John Facenda?
No, oh my God. Oh, wow.
John Facenda.
That's perfect, yeah.
Very popular in the Philadelphia area. So he goes to a bar one night, and Ed Sabol from NFL Films happened to be at the bar and was showing some highlights on TV slow motion. He said, we're going someplace with this.
There's the voice of God. Oh, man.
Exactly. That was his nickname, guys, the voice of God. So I think the story was John Facenda auditioned for Ed Sabol right then and there, and Sabol said, you're the guy. And then the rest, as they say, is history. I just remember when I would see those NFL films, like the close-ups and the slow motions, you know, like Gale Sayers running. Facenda had a very cinematic voice.
The frozen tundra. Oh, yeah.
Well, you know what? Chris Berman appropriated that. It was really Chris Berman's phrase, but he attributed it to Facenda. But he was just trying to, like, basically honor Facenda by...
Oh, I'm so glad you brought that one up.
Yes.
Man, he...
Yes.
Oh, God. Yeah. You know, as a wannabe broadcaster, God, he set the standard in that stuff. Wow.
Well, Facenda's voice, how could you not follow that voice? He could do the Barbie movie right now and make it interesting.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay.
Plus, he knew his stuff, and the NFL films, they were so in sync. And he obviously developed a style and a script that kept you, you didn't know whether Gale Sayers was going to score the touchdown. Because, you know, he would describe the run and him cutting 26 times to get to the end zone. But he, to me, was one of the great voices in the history of American sports broadcast.
Absolutely.
You know, so we have Glickman, we have my guy Facenda. Now I'm going to mention a guy that was local, but he became national, and in a sport that wasn't like nearly like as popular as baseball, football, and that's Bud Collins.
Oh, yeah.
Doing tennis.
Yeah, yes.
And I think, right, Tim and Rick, he did it during the heyday of tennis when Rod Laver was playing and Ken Rosewall was playing and Steffi Graf and Martina Navratilova, all the tennis greats. And the thing I loved about him is not only was he well-versed in tennis, but he was humorous. He had all kinds of humorous stories to say about the players, and he just kept it loose and funny and interesting, and he really made tennis interesting, even for the casual fan.
Oh, and he wore interesting clothing, too.
Oh, my God, yeah, he would wear the plaid pants and all that stuff, right? So, you know, he's on my list.
Yep, great.
And Tim, a guy that you mentioned that I'm with you 100% is our guy on the Patriots.
Gil Santos?
Yeah, Gil Santos. To me, it takes me through that whole Tom Brady period. And he, like you said, worked with Cappelletti. They made the game, I mean, Brady made and the guys made the game exciting, but they delivered it perfectly. And all those years that the Patriots won championships, I cannot get Gil Santos and Gino Cappelletti out of my head because they are so good at what they did. You know, so I'm with you 100% on Gil Santos there, you know. Of course, it's a subjective thing anyway, you know.
Oh, no, this is scientific all the way.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. I'm also going to mention, well, Al Michaels, people have talked about him. I think he's been great no matter what sport he's done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even to this day, I believe he's in his 70s now, but he looks like 20 years younger, and he's still on top of his game when he does Sunday Night Football. And, of course, everyone remembers the 1980 hockey team and the broadcast, but he's always been great. So he's on my list. I also have Dick Enberg.
Oh, wow, yeah. Yes.
Dick Enberg
yes.
is so great. In every sport, but particularly I go back to the days of college basketball when Bill Walton played and that gang, and they had an 88-game winning streak, and they came into Notre Dame and lost that game on national TV. And Enberg did that dramatic game in dramatic fashion. And he had the perfect voice. He just was so good. He was so knowledgeable, and he could cross over the different sports. I just love that guy. I thought he was fantastic. I know he passed away just a few years ago, but he was one of the great voices of all time.
Mm-hmm.
He's universally known, I think, for the many sports that he did, but I associated him more with college basketball and the big games in college basketball. You know?
Absolutely.
So Keith Jackson, who Steve Krause mentioned so eloquently, who could not like him, right? Fumble! We recovered it, you know. And then I think he used to say that, like an Alabama lineman, his hands were so big that when he raised them to go for he blocked the sun. The guy's hand was so big that he blocked the sun. He was so, you know, he made those dramatic statements, but yet he was understated in many ways. And he's sort of like a southern voice, and he was perfect for those Oklahoma-Texas games and Alabama versus LSU. Yep. But basically he was perfect for any college football game. So darn good. Just
Amen.
Absolutely great.
Yep.
Kurt Gowdy, definitely, Tim, the voice of our youth, the Narragansett ads, all that stuff.
Hi, neighbor.
Hi, neighbor. Ted Williams.
I still know the song.
I do, too.
Me, too. And, of course, Tim, the Red Sox were so bad then, but somehow he made them palatable, you know? As a little kid when we were in our teens, we watched the Red Sox, even if they were going to finish eighth or ninth, because, you know, Gowdy was so talented and so professional and so good at what he did, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I've got him on my list. Jack Buck.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Jack Buck his son is okay, and he does the national games, and he's done the Super Bowl, but Jack Buck, of course, was the voice of the St. Louis Cardinals.
Yes.
But also he would do the playoffs and the World Series, and I just loved his voice.
Yep.
I thought he had a perfect, kind of a deep voice. He knew his stuff. He was no nonsense. So he's another one of those classic guys who was so professional about what he did. You know what? I lost how many guys I've named.
All right, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. One more.
Okay, well, Vin Scully.
Ah, yes.
Vin Scully has to be there. Rick and Tim, and Tim, I'm not quite sure. Tim, how old are you now?
I'm 70 in a month.
Okay. I remember, then you might remember too, Tim, you were a little younger than me. I'll be 74 next week. But not only was he great even when he was in his 70s, but back in the 1960s when Sandy Koufax and Don Drysdale were pitching and they would be in the World Series, Vin Scully was a young broadcaster. And I just associated those great Dodger teams and those World Series games with Vin Scully. And, of course, he did it for, what, 60 years or something like that? I mean, he was doing it just, I think he retired. He just passed away a couple of years after he retired. Vin Scully, to me, was just phenomenal on the Los Angeles, in the Los Angeles area, as well as national level. And, of course, I was at the 1986 World Series when he was doing the game where the ball went through Buckner's legs. You know, there's a little roller down the first base and, you know, goes through Buckner's legs. He was just so versatile and so knowledgeable about the game. And no matter what batter from what team came up, right, Tim, he had a backstory about the guy. Some guy that was just called up from AAA in Syracuse or something, and Scully would say he grew up in, you know, Calamentary, California, and his father picked grapes for 13 years. He just knew a backstory about every batter who ever came to the plate.
And you know, he... Go ahead, Tim.
Not only was he the voice of the Dodgers, you know, you listen to the games that he broadcast, and he became the voice of the West Coast.
Oh, yeah.
Because back then, you know, East Coast and West Coast, they may as well have been a world apart.
Not
a six-hour plane flight, but, a six-day trip in a covered wagon. And yet, it was Vin Scully's voice that, we're on the West Coast. You know, it's the Giants and the Dodgers, which was, like, kind of cool, because, like, New York teams just transplanted, and now they're playing each other again. But the Willie Mays, Willie McCovey, like you said, those great Dodger teams with Snyder and all those guys.
Yep.
And you sit there on a set, you didn't know the National League teams, really, but you knew Vin Scully, you know, and you knew that those guys were on when you heard his voice. He was a recognizable piece.
Yep. He did a cool, I know we're getting close to the deadline here, Rick. A very quick Vin Scully story. I remember watching a game just about 10 years ago in which it was a Dodger broadcast, Tim, in which they did the first three innings in black and white as if it was the 1950s.
Mm-hmm.
And then they inserted some graphics, because remember in those early days, you didn't know the score of the game because there were no graphics at the bottom of the screen. You relied on a Vin Scully to tell you the Dodgers are leading 2-1 after three.
Right.
So then around the 1960s, they started to put the score at the bottom of the screen. So the next three innings, they had the score on the screen, still in black and white. And then around the fifth or sixth inning, they went into a color TV mode, and so he would broadcast the game when color TV
came the
mode to go. So he was basically giving you a history of television baseball broadcast within his nine-inning Dodger game. And it was so cleverly put together by whoever.
As a student of broadcasting, the two things you mentioned there, his ability to insert background information effortlessly. If you listen to the current Red Sox baseball team, which is the Red Sox announcing team, the main announcer has been on there for like 150 years. It's so forced. It's so wooden.
Yep.
You know, they come up with these ridiculous numbers constantly from the minor league play of this guy or that guy. But Scully would just interject it so smoothly, and you'd never lose thought the flow of the game. It's just incredible. I got to tell you guys, Mike, you have five of my guys on your list.
Okay.
They are Gil Santos, Keith Jackson, Kurt Gowdy, Jack Buck, and Vin Scully. Now, can I give you guys my order?
Absolutely. Sure. Absolutely.
No, Rick, we don't have time for that.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll see you later. See you next week. We're going to go long.
No, give it to me.
Well, notably, not on anybody's list, and it's not on my list either, but names like Bob Costas and Jim Nantz, and they're not on our list for a reason.
Yep.
All right, so here we go. Now, my
Howie Cosell's another one that's on the list.
Yep. My honorable mention is Don Earl, Red Barber, Ernie Harwell, Chris Schenkel, Kevin Harlan. That's my honorable mention. Okay. I love all those guys. Now, number 10. Are you guys sitting down for this one?
Yes.
Dick Button.
Oh, the skating guy.
Yes.
Button, yeah.
And the reason every 4 years, I know, and I think most baseball, football, and basketball, and hockey guys don't know a lot about figure skating.
Right.
And when he would come on with the Olympics and talk about these these skaters, not knowing anything about them, he was just so enthused, and he knew everything about their backgrounds. All right, I'm taking too long.
It felt like you got to know the sport.
Exactly, Dick Button. Number nine, Jack Buck. I love his voice. I grew up listening out on when I lived in Texas to the St. Louis Cardinals broadcast, and at that time, Harry Carey and Jack Buck split the play-by-play. Number eight, Keith Jackson. We've talked about him. Love him. Number seven, Sean McDonough. Agree there. Number six, Bob Wilson, or to the blue line, or across the blue line. Yeah, Bob Wilson, great voice. Number five, Mel Allen.
Oh, yeah, tremendous.
Mel Allen, to me, was the John Vicenda of baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Because every week, when I lived in Germany, you didn't have the access to ESPN or any of that stuff. They would have a video clip at the movie theaters, like a 15-minute clip of the week's roundups. And Mel Allen was that voice. Number four, Gil Santos. Number three, where did it go? Don't leave the room. Oh, there it is, Vin Scully. Number two, Kurt Gowdy. And my number one is Jim McKay. I thought Jim McKay could do anything, anywhere, anytime about sports and inform you about it. He wasn't...
Not only that, right, you talk about human drama and the Olympic Games when the Israelis were murdered.
Yeah.
And he had to handle that situation, on the air, live, I believe.
When yeah.
He had to announce that the...
What was breaking out? Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and
that was one of the toughest assignments that any broadcaster ever had.
I agree, and he handled it for a week. And
guys, you know what was notable about that coverage? He sat in that chair by himself.
Uh-huh.
He was there alone. Nobody sat with him. He reported that to the world by himself.
Yeah.
Yep.
I just think he was the greatest. This has been an absolute blast. And going back down memory lane, that is so cool. Oh, my goodness.
You're old, Rick. We can do this.
I know. Mike and Tim, you got to come up with some ideas for me for next time, and we'll spread it out between now and next week. Cause,
I'll tell you what, we can certainly talk about broadcasts that we don't like and why. It might get a little bit too rough, though.
Yeah. I don't want to go down the road of local talk radio.
Yes, right.
Oh, and I did want to mention Guy Minella. He's my honorable mention as
terrific.
Well. He invented sports talk radio in Boston.
Yeah, he did. He was great.
And he did it with a lot of class.
Yep, no doubt about it.
All right, boys.
All right.
I guess that's it. So come up with an assignment for us for next week, and we'll talk again.
All right, this is a great one, Rick. I'm glad we did this one.
Oh, this is fun. All right, thanks, Mike. Be well.
Here, bye-bye now.
Okay, bye-bye.
Hey, Mike.
Tim, final thoughts?
A lot of good names in. A lot of names that we all missed. And certainly had to go back. If I was going to do national, the name of Keith Jackson would have been a primary one. He just made Saturday football. He made it all worth listening to. And of course, I think it was one of you guys mentioned Chris Schenkel. And again, the voice of, and he and Lindsey Nelson.
Lindsey Nelson, yeah.
Notre Dame football.
Yep. Yeah. All right, Coach, this has been fun. We'll figure out what we're going to do next week. In the meantime, you be well. Stay safe.
You also, my friend.
All right, Tim. Thank you very much. All right, that's our Goodwill Ambassador at MSO, Tim Kearns, also our sports analyst. With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore. Thank you for joining us. This has been North Shore Sports Night on MSONewsSports.com.